Hello, and welcome to the No BS Spiritual Book Club's face-to-face with interview series, in which we invite respected authors, speakers, teachers, and researchers in the consciousness arena to share the stories behind the 10 best spiritual books that influence them the most on their life journey. And joining me today is Leanne Heltzel, who spent decades exploring spirituality and human potential through mentors like Jean Houston, Deepak Chopra, and other gifted healers, and her own nature. A visual artist, art director, graphic designer, and marketing guru with an array of esoteric gifts that she employs with clients of her multidimensional marketing firm, Creative One, Leanne is one of those enviable, multi-talented people whose work and passions cover a broad spectrum of activities, from spiritual death transitionalist, assisting people crossing over through the death process, to channeling frequency meta art, to developing a new genre of meditation through her incredible ocular meditations. Now, if that sounds a little confusing or a bit out there, stay tuned, because we will actually have an opportunity later in the show to experience an ancient practice that will give you the opportunity to see and feel the power of frequency meta art for yourself. But for now, let's meet Leanne. Leanne, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Sandy. I love being here.
Now, you have said that creativity and imagination are gateways into higher human consciousness, and they're the cornerstone of your work and passions. I would imagine that that also applies to books. So tell us a little bit about how books fit into that arena of creativity and the imagination for you.
You know, Sandy, first I just want to thank you for asking me this question, because it was a new question, right? Like, what are the top 10 books? And what it actually did for me was it took me through my life. And I don't think that happens for everybody, but it took me through my whole life of this unfolding. And looking back then at the end of choosing these books, I realized, oh, wow, I was a young child, like a 12-year-old, you know, actually instinctively knowing that there was this element of us, what we call human potential, what we call human consciousness. I had that spark way back as a child. And so that's what this process showed me. And I realized too, looking at these books, thinking through them, was it's more about the energy of the book than the words on the page. It's more, you know, some of them are just like educational, right? It's just like, okay, there's like this deep well of information I need to understand. But then others were more esoteric, just a feeling. And I felt like I'm getting something from this book on a higher realm than my own understanding. So it's always, you know, a mixture of those. And it really showed me that life kind of stepped in at the right moments, right? With this, oh, now you need this piece of information. It's going to be in chapter 11 or whatever. So yeah, it's really been such an integral part of the journey.
Difficult to stick to 10?
Well, you know, it's what I did, because you know me, a few years ago, I got rid of everything I own and got on the road. So I didn't have any books. I didn't have like my library books to look and go, So I just kind of let them pop up in my awareness, you know? And then, you know, one would pop up and I'd be like, really? And I just realized that for right now in my life, I need to be aware that that was an important book and why and where I was at that time.
When did you start your spiritual journey? I mean, okay, that may be a silly question. You'll say the moment I was born, but when were you aware of starting, you know, down this path?
You know, I'm going to say I was aware that I was a deep thinker on these subjects around the age of 7. I remember walking out of church. You know, like how you can like pinpoint and go back to a memory and it's just like so real. And I was walking out of church. I was looking at the sidewalk and I was thinking, things don't completely make sense to me. They're not explaining to me, what is this Holy Spirit? What does it do? You know, who am I really? I remember having those thoughts at the age of 7.
That's an interesting age too.
Well, and I also had a father that was, he was really a spiritual mentor for me. He was really into Edgar Cayce and, you know, all of these books. And we would go on a walk every Sunday. We'd go on a hike. And I was the only one he could talk to about them. So he'd be like, hey, sis, you know what I'm reading right now? And so he kind of fed that, that space, gave me that space to think broader as well.
That's a wonderful gift to have someone who, you know, at such an early age is sharing that kind of information with you and sparking things off within you as well.
Absolutely. And I adore my father. And so to have that element in our relationship, to be able to have these really deep conversations, that became a normal part of being a human being to me, to be able to have those deep conversations. Yeah, you're right. It's a huge gift.
Yeah. So let's start with your books. And the first one, in fact, you've picked a few that, they crop up again and again and again. So, you know, we know the value of these books. Jonathan Livingston Seagull, Richard Bach.
Yeah.
So tell us about that book and what it did for you.
Well, you know what? Like I said earlier, this really took me through my entire life. So this is my first book that came up for me. I was 12 years old. And again, it was the connection with my father that we read it together and then we saw the movie together and we talked about it at length. And it was, I spent so much time in nature. So for this to be a bird bringing the story and, you know, it was this story all about, maybe I'm expected to be one thing, but I can be so much more. Right. And he just listened to that inward voice and he just did it. And he didn't really worry too much about what the surrounding environment was perceiving about him or thinking about him. And so that was like the very, I can see these threads through my life of that human potential piece, right? That, yeah, anything's possible and things that are beyond what are deemed, you know, what we should be able to do. So that's what I love about this book. And it was just so sweet. And the imagery is so simple. And yeah.
Well, that dovetails perfectly, really, because that's how you've lived your life. You have lived your life as if anything is possible. And you're not afraid. I mean, anyone who knew you, you know, I guess was not particularly surprised when you sold everything and just went on the road, you know, for a while. Not many people would do that. But I love the fact that you, everything that's within you comes out, gets expressed in some way. And so many people don't have that, you know, either because they're too afraid to, or they don't have the time, or it's not encouraged.
Well, I really think it goes to the fact that, and I'm sure we'll, you know, circle around to this a couple times in this conversation, but I really think for me anyways, in my life, it circles around that openness to creativity and imagination. You know, you said earlier how what I stand all my work on and to be able to step into that space, then you can exist more and experience more of life from that perspective. So yeah, getting rid of everything. It's like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. I mean, I didn't think I was going to do that until I did it. It wasn't like I was sitting around my whole life going, I would love to spend 4 years just, you know, driving around my car. I mean, I never had that thought, right? But it was the potential. It was the possibility that came up. And it was like, yeah, you know what? There's going to be something really big on the other side of that.
Yeah. And it's when, you know, new talents and new ways of doing things crop up as well. I mean, your meta art, you know, which is sort of fairly recent. I mean, I don't know if you always knew that was inside you, but I, you know, almost have a vision of you suddenly just getting this urge one day and, oh, wow, look what's shown up.
Well, actually, it's a little different than that. I am a trained artist, so yeah. You know, I do have that propensity, but I was sitting around, you know, going down the road of graphic design and marketing in my head thinking, when I retire, I'm going to paint. I'll grab a paintbrush and a canvas when I retire. So it really was something that cropped up through my work with my marketing clients. And it actually started like 10 years ago on a spiritual retreat where I had in meditation was continually painting the same painting. And every time I would go into meditation, and I'm talking, I was like the brush and the paint and the canvas in this meditation. And I couldn't wait to get back to the States. And I, first thing I did, went and had to buy everything because I didn't have a studio at the time, and painted that painting from that meditation with literally no memory of it. Like I was in that meditative state. I don't think I could have painted it if I hadn't been. So that was 10 years ago, but then it was like, oh, that was a cool experience. One day I'm going to do that. And then really through my marketing clients, the paintings crept back in again.
Okay, well, let's move on to, we'll come back to that. We'll come back to it many times. The Prophet, book two, Khalil Gibran. What a beautiful book.
You know, it's such a classic. I'm sure there's several people that have chosen this book. Why it was meaningful for me is, so go back to that 12-year-old Leanne, you know, that was into Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And I spent that period of my life in the woods doing nothing but writing poetry and sketching. And so now I'm in college when I discovered this book in art school, and seeing the same individual that wrote poetry and sketched. And it was the drawings in those books, in that book, that really spoke to me just as much as the words do. And again, it was like this another layer of, because I was a young adult, you know, but it has such depth into all these elements in which what it is to be a human, right?
Yeah. And it has that simplicity, that purity of truth, you know, whatever he says is like, oh yeah, of course, you know, you can't argue with it. It doesn't feel as though it's been, you know, it's a device or, you know, it's, the words have been manipulated in any way. It just, it's got isness about it.
It's truth. It's just simple.
Just truth. Simple truth. Yeah. So the third book, so many people were touched by that book. And sometimes I look back on it now and think, oh yeah, well, you know, that's, you know, but you can't deny that so many people were woken up by this book. So clearly it's got something very profound within it. What did you find?
Yeah. Well, now this book came to me in my 30s at a very interesting time. I could pretty much say my life was crumbling around me. I was in a dangerous marriage. I was fearful for me and my children. And so it was a very unsettling space in my life. And this book came in with...
Give us the title, because I don't think I did.
The Celestine Prophecy. Mm. Yeah, I don't think you did. Yeah. Yeah, it was the nine spiritual insights. Again, you know, there's just truths. It's just... And it really reestablished my foundation in humanity, because my world was so disrupted and unsettled. And it was at that time too that my spiritual tribe was really coming to me. And this book allowed us endless conversations. You know, it was such a jumping off point to dive deeply into these insights. So that's why I loved this book. That's why this book meant so much to me.
And so all of these books are chronological. I mean, you've written them down exactly as they came into your life, okay, in sequence. So book four, Conversations with God, book one, The Language of the Soul, Neil Donald Walsh.
Yeah. This book, you know, now I'm kind of getting my foundation back. I'm really stepping into what is mine to do you know, let's start cranking here, and really started diving into that human potential piece, traveling the world, you know, diving into that. What I love about this book is there's this pretense that the words are not the ultimate truth, that the words are symbols, that the words need to be taken in to be determined what the truth is. So it wasn't a book that I read word for word, and you know, this it encourages the reader to consult with themselves and to consult with what did they feel the truth is. And that's what I really enjoyed about this book. And you know, and the fact of, you know, many of us do automatic writing, you know, my paintings are automatic paintings. So that context of this really clear narrative that can come through with, you know, if you perceive them as truths or truths, is just really brilliantly done.
So did the other books in that series have the same effect?
They had a, this one had the biggest effect for me. I enjoy the other books, but yeah, this one had the biggest effect for me.
Well, book five, I think I haven't done it, but I think if I was to calculate, you know, which book comes up the most often, it probably would be this one, The Four Agreements, A Practical Guide to Personal Freedom, Don Miguel Ruiz.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this book, it should be a manual for being a human being on this planet, right?
Yeah.
If we could just learn this from the onset of life, mm-hmm. master it, the world would be a vastly different place. And there are just these four, albeit simple and albeit pretty impossible to, you know, live day in and day out. But I've read it multiple times. I don't reread books very, very much, but this book I reread, and it really reminds me of who I need to be.
Out of the books so far, was there one that, I mean, obviously they all had an impact on you, but was there one that had left you reeling, you know, as if, oh my God.
Yeah, we're getting to that one. That one's next. Life and
Truth. There we go.
Is that the little intro into the next book?
Well, it wasn't, but it's perfect. Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East. This has come up, I think, in the last three episodes, this book. And you've got all six volumes listed. So you've read them all.
I've read them all. It took me a long time.
Yeah.
Right? Because I needed to read and then kind of process and read and then process. Yeah.
Yes. So for those who don't know, just, you know, tell us a little bit about the story and then how it impacted you.
Yeah. So the narrative of the story is a remembrance of a bibliography of William Spalding's journey to go through India and Tibet and China and Persia to meet these so-called masters, avatars, right? And it's a research party. And that's the other thing that I loved about it, is that they weren't spiritual seekers. They were researchers. They wanted proof. And the way they went about getting it, you know, was very researched, like, right? Mm-hmm. And so you see it through their eyes. And what I love about it is it connected. I've always been a very spiritual person, and I work with Christ consciousness, and I loved church growing up. And so I have this connection to the teachings of Jesus. And so this connected me to, he said that we can do these things and greater things than he, right? And he was our teacher. And so this book started putting together those dots of other individuals that could do these amazing acts. Yeah. And so it was so exciting to me. And it just really sparked a deeper curiosity. You know, we always hear we only use 10% of our brain. So this is, I think, when I really shifted into, all right, I want to know what the other 90% can do, because that's the human potential point. And that's the point that these individuals could actually you know, re-manifest in different locations and just do these crazy things, right? So, yeah, you know, these capacities to heal and change our environment and things that maybe we only have to watch some fanciful movie in order to witness. But no, there was proof.
Did you believe? You believed what you read?
I did.
You did? Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say this. I won't say that it's a belief. It's reading it, reading, you know, the interpretation of what these 11 researchers were experiencing, and then going, okay, how does that feel within me? Do I feel like humanity is capable of doing these things? And it was this, yes, I do.
The reason I ask is long before I read these, I read some books by Lobsang Rampa, who was somebody from the West, supposedly, who then had a walk-in and became a Tibetan Lama. And he wrote some really interesting books, which became very popular with the hippies, you know, back in the 60s and 70s. And some of the things that he wrote about were the same as in these books. And I have to confess that when I read them, I thought, I don't know whether this guy's just having us on or not, you know?
Right, right. Maybe he just took some good drugs or something. I mean, it's unbelievable stuff. There's no denying that.
Absolutely.
I mean, I've never seen any of this stuff happen, but it's the potential that we're capable of it.
Yeah.
That's what sparks me.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if people can do this, what else can they do?
Exactly.
Yeah. So number seven, another one that comes up again and again, A Course in Miracles. You know, what can one say about this? This has changed so many people's lives.
Yeah, you know, crawling through my life, I'm now in my 40s and really, really getting my life in control, really branching out with my business and my esoteric gifts. And I took a year to read this book. I didn't want to, you know, there were some groups and classes locally or online, and I really just wanted to integrate it myself. And I will say that I feel like maybe I got 30% of what I read. You know, like I would read like a page and a half and I'd be like, okay, that's it. I just really need to integrate this and absorb this and think about it. And yeah, I didn't plan on it taking a year, but it took a year. And during that time, I started using some of those perspectives, like bringing some of those perspectives into my day-to-day life. And saw what many would call miracles, you know, and just really understanding what a miracle is. And it really strengthened my own connection to that Christ consciousness and how we really are here to be as human beings. It was incredibly inspiring. And after that year, I did actually find a local group and, you know, hung out with them and checked out what they had to say. But it was one of those books. I've never dived into a book like that before.
Number eight, slightly different. Power versus Force, David Hawkins, published in 1985.
Yeah. This book really stretched my thinking about consciousness, really at a point when I needed to understand the scientific understanding about what consciousness is. And so this was a really heady book for me. You know, I said earlier that some books were like more educational and other ones more, you know, esoteric. And this is definitely an educational one, definitely diving into the areas that he dives into, still reflect back to, you know, the 1 to 1,000 calibrated scale, you know, like that's just in my awareness now. and really understanding what the morphogenic field is, because that's really what where I started understanding about possibilities within human development, within the human capacities of what we're able to achieve. And this is actually when I got to this book, when you know, when I was going through this process, I realized, oh, that's been my theme my whole life, right? Mm-hmm. Like what is this human potential that, you know, we're capable of? And I have my own way of getting into that. And there's millions of ways into getting into that higher space where that kind of that new way of being a human exists.
Yeah. So that's where the excitement lies for me in living, is the potential, you know, what else? What else can you do? And it's, there's so much in front of us. You know, if we only realized it and looked, you know, oh, I could do that, and I can do that, and I can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we just need to get out of the little box that we live in.
Yeah.
Right? We live in this little box of what reality is to be. And when we can use that imagination, when we can step into that space of creativity, we can just explore it and feel it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Now, the last two are quite different.
I know, right?
I kind of went, oh, when I got to those, thinking, oh, okay, this is interesting. So, Alien Interview by Lawrence R. Spencer. Tell us about this one and why it's here.
Yeah, you know what? This book came to me a few years ago when I was in my roaming around the U.S. homeless. I was driving cross country and I was listening to it on audiobook, and I literally couldn't wait to get out of the hotel and into the car the next day to continue it. Not a spiritual book, right? It's a log of the encounters that happened with an alien from a crash at Roswell back in 1947. And so it's just these documented files basically of the nurse that was having this interaction with this alien telepathically. And it was just so intriguing to see humanity from the eyes of something outside of our world looking at us. So, you know, this cosmic view looking down on us as a planet. And oddly enough, things started like clicking, you know, things that I would have like read or learned in an experience, or like in Power versus Force, for example, like the things, it was saying a lot of the same things. There were these dots that were being connected. And more than anything, I love the fact that what we were just talking about, like if we can think outside our realm of our day-to-day and what we think reality is, this is a totally different view on humanity. And it's not that I'm not saying, oh my gosh, I believe everything in this book. It allowed me to step into that space. And just being in that new space of, well, what if this is true? Right? What if we're all on this planet because we're basically like rejects from other galaxies, right? Like just to look at it from that perspective, it puts us in that imaginal space. And that's what I loved about this book.
Is that what the alien told the nurse, that we were rejects?
That's only one of the things.
Can you remember any others?
There were, I actually just re-listened to it because I had it on audio and I just took a long drive. So I decided to listen to it again. It was, there's a lot. Where we are in the universe, why are planets important to the rest of the galaxy? You know, why there are the life forms that we have. And a lot of it is like, you really have to use your imagination to imagine that it could even be true. You know, so it's again, it's just that, well, what if there's these other locations in the cosmos that actually create life forms, animals, amphibians, fish, whatever. And those are placed here on our planet. Like that was a concept. And that the planet basically, this planet was someplace where if there were, I'm gonna like use our words, like artists and activists and individuals that couldn't be controlled, you know, that were like pushing the edge, send them to Earth.
And I love that actually.
Yeah, and that's why we have this big array of people, you know, different kinds of people, and so yeah, it's pretty crazy stuff.
I wonder what they thought sending people to Earth would do. I mean, is it just get them out of our sight, you know, and out here, or is it they'll learn, they go there and they'll learn something and they'll reform.
It was get them. We can't deal with them. Get them out. It was like putting them in the corner. And the fact of this the way we keep coming back into another life, into another life, that's a cycle that we've been put into, and we don't necessarily have to do that. So
what was the most startling thing that you heard in this book, read in this book?
Oh gosh, there's so many. I think probably the thing about the animals, that the life forms were actually like manufactured specifically for various planets, for their oxygen levels, for their existing biosphere. So they were actually manufactured to survive here. I think that's crazy. That's crazy talk.
Yeah. Okay. This is one I have to get and read.
It's definitely something you got to read.
Okay. So book number 10 is The Gaia Codex by Sarah Drew.
Yeah. Have you read this book?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fictional book. It's about the princesses of Astera and about this young girl that is born into this ability, this ancient ability, and her parents die, and she goes on her journey finding her sisterhood and discovering these abilities that she has, that she's capable of. And it's ancient through like the rise and falls of civilizations and the codes of culture and the planetary rejuvenation. She's been involved with all of that, this lineage of hers and this lineage of her sisters. And she's slowly discovering who she really is. And again, what she's really capable of, and the meaningness that comes through this mystical sisterhood of women all over the planet that just kind of come in and out of her life. And, you know, they find each other when they're supposed to find each other, much like we know, or we believe that when the right person is supposed to come into our life, they're there, right? So it's a very mystical story, and the way it's written, you can just completely step into Lila Sophia, the main character, and have this experience with her. So it's just written so beautifully, and it really strengthens those same core things, the synchronicities of life, right? The deepening of life, the responsibility that we have for our work in the world. And what we're going to do.
So did you see this as a great story, a piece of fiction with some very interesting principles that are being shared, and you know, or did you see this as something like many people who've read The Mists of Avalon, you know, get the same feeling that actually isn't fiction. you know, somebody has channeled that information and that's fact. Did you get that feeling?
Yeah, with this? Absolutely. Yeah. And I know what you mean. I've read the Mist of Avalon. It's, yes, it's definitely that sense of, we're going to call it fiction, you know, because yeah, that's more mainstream, yeah, and it's going to be acceptable. But it's really far more than that.
And if was there any sense of, I know this?
It's a sense of knowing a similar feeling of it, not this specifically, right? But it's that same capacities that I believe we all have as a human, that these capacities are there. And these are her capacity. These are the capacity that she had within her, but I have capacities within me, and you have capacities within you, and it's all about discovering that. Mm. That's what was real in it to me. Mm. She actually had like these markings, morpho markings they were called, and I see them as they like almost like a tattoo. But they would glow on her arms and they would move, and she would actually be able to go into different forms of being like a different woman and experiencing that woman in her body. So, you know, it was definitely in that realm of like the masters, you know, like what are we truly capable of?
Mm. Yeah, indeed. What a great question. If only we knew. That is your 10 best list. I want to talk about you now and some of your creativity. You've said that your initial esoteric gifts were uncovered very early in life, assisting those crossing over. How old were you when you were doing that? And how were you assisting people? And what did that feel like?
Yeah. I would say I became really aware of it in my 20s, and not anything at all that I ever trained for or asked for. Matter of fact, I didn't want to be able to do it. It was something that I had to be told much later in life that this is a gift and you need to own it and see it for what it is, you know, see it for being a gift. And so at that point, I realized, okay, yeah, this is an honor. This is an honor to help usher a soul through that process.
So how are you doing that? How are you ushering a soul through that process?
Yeah, So the individuals are always brought to me in some form or another. So somebody has come to me and has said, can you please check on this person? And you know, it's one of those things where when you can just do something, you just do it, right? And so I go into a meditative state and Christ consciousness, Christ is there with me, and I call the person in. And they don't have to come in that in-between space that they're in, there's still free will. So they don't have to come in. So oftentimes a person, especially a person that doesn't know me, won't. And so, you know, I'll wait a day or two and I'll call them in again. And eventually they step into this space, this liminal space that I'm in. And I see them, I see what they're experiencing, and I hear what they need. And it's coming through me to, for instance, if a person has taken their life, I've worked with a lot of people that have committed suicide. Those are the people that people call me. Usually I can check on this person because society has told us that that's a huge sin, right? So there may be a dark cloud around the person. There might be, there's definitely this energy that needs to be resolved so that that person can cross over in peace and in love. And so it can take many, many forms. And a multitude of things can happen. But when it does, the person needs to accept, you know, that love is the truth. And when that happens, it's just bam. I just see a white light in there, and it's I had an instance once where it was two young individuals. It was a murder suicide teenagers, and they both came. And I had teenagers at the time, and that's what I mean when I'm like, I didn't actually want to do this work, right? Because this is not pleasant. And they came, and the one said, "I'm fine, I'm ready to go, but I'm not gonna go without my friend." And my only question is only is always, what do you require?
One second, there's something happened to your sound, so we're losing a little bit of the clarity of your words. I don't know what that is, but I'm hanging on every word, and I want to make sure I hear it all.
Yeah.
So that's better. Yeah.
Okay, I'm not sure when that happened, but these, you know, they came in together, and the one was going to wait, right? And so my question is always, what do you require? And when I posed that question, he just wanted me to share some information with his family. Mm-hmm. And so I promised to do that. And afterwards, you know, I reached out to the family and I did that. And so, you know, but it can be a multitude of things. And so it was that for a number of years. You know, people that have recently passed away or I've crossed over hundreds of spirits that are in a spot, you know, in like a structure. But then many years ago, I started working with people as they were actively dying, talking to them from the side of spirit. And again, only saying, what do you require? Because so much of the time, you know, family members want to know things, want questions answered. They want to communicate. And that's not my job. My job is only to ask, what do you require? And that is such an unbelievable experience to have for a soul. So many times, I believe we come in with these list of things that you know, we've committed to doing, learning, expanding, doing as a human being. And sometimes we don't, right? But at that moment, at those moments, at the end, all of those things can be gained. Even if the experiences didn't happen, the lessons can happen at the end if that person's soul wants that. And so I always say my only role is safe passage. If somebody calls me and says, you know, can you talk to my dad? He died 3 years ago. That's not my job. My job is safe passage. What do you require? That's it. Very small window of time.
Mm. Did you know the books on your 10 best list, did they help you accept this as a gift?
No, that actually came from, it made me understand it. Maybe, you know, I would always tell my kids when they were growing up, listen, don't tell anybody, because I don't want you to be the kids with the crazy mom that talks to dead people. Like, we don't need that, right? So it wasn't really until a very special individual in my life said, a very gifted individual said, you know what, this is a gift. And yeah. Until you acknowledge it as that, your next gifts are not going to show up. You need it. You just need to hold on to it. And you need to own it and find the joy in it, you know, and find the the responsibility in it rather than kind of going, because when somebody would call me and ask me, my response was always, oh shit, I gotta do this. You know, it was, and now it's an honor. It's a soul that, yes, it's an honor to do it now.
So let's talk about your company, Creative One, multi-dimensional marketing firm. I mean, I'm all for that. You know, anyone who knows me well knows that I've been a great advocate of what I call resonance marketing for a long time, you know, and it is really about deep, deep, deep communication, not only with the people that you're trying to talk to, but with the energy of what it is you're creating as well that wants to be born. So, you know, I find this fascinating and I love that you're doing this. So tell us how you work with clients in a multidimensional way.
Yeah, well, I'll kind of take you through the journey of it too, right? Because I had these abilities and, you know, crossing people over, and then I worked in a marketing firm. And so I started to really feel in my life that I was living in silos, that I was, you know, these two different people. And so when I started Creative One 11 years ago, I made the commitment to not live like that, to live fully in who I was. And I mean, I really didn't know even what that meant. It was a personal commitment I made. It wasn't something that, you know, I was like, okay, now I'm going to articulate this in marketing copy and sell it. It was just like this personal, like, yeah, I'm not going to, you know, be this person that dives deeply into human potential and then, you know, do these four big catalogs and get them to the press by next Friday. So what organically happened was that ability that I have to step into that liminal space of higher consciousness on behalf of these souls crossing over. I realized through books like Power Versus Force and, you know, these learning of understanding more about consciousness, I was able to go into that same space on behalf of person or a company and see their company, their mission in the world from that higher space where pure potential exists. Pure potential doesn't exist in our thinking mind. We need to get out of our mind, right, to see what's truly possible. So we start these companies, we start these organizations and endeavors, and they're living in little boxes too. They can be so much bigger than we could have ever dreamt them to be. So I realized that I could go into that space and get this like bird's eye view of what the person or the organization is actually capable of, and then create the branding and the marketing strategy and everything from that space. And it's still playing with all the same blocks, right? You know, we still have social media and we still have websites and we still have all these building blocks, but we're using them with a different perspective. And I do this one piece that I can locate, we'll just say if I'm doing it for you and your company, you're an individual, but I can do this for large firms too, but I can locate you on this earth energetically, and then I could locate you on what I call fully realized divine earth. It's that version, that dimension of our earth where you and everybody on it is enlightened, right? There's all these different dimensions of you. And so I find you there. And when that happens, I see whatever I see and I describe it to my clients. The result of it is synchronicities increase, right? Doors open that needed to open in order for this next expansion piece to happen within the company. So it's really feels quite magical sometimes. Like we had one client a number of years ago that we were rebranding a whole division, and they hadn't told their staff. We renamed it, you know, everything was at the printer, the website was getting built. The staff didn't even know, the sales staff didn't even know. And the owner called and said, you know, what's going on? Because our phone's ringing off the hook. And we've really been struggling to get this vision going. And that's when, you know, it's like, oh, right. Because I was able to make that connection. The connection's there. It's strengthening it. It's bringing it into conscious awareness. When we bring things into awareness, then we bring it into our reality, and then it can become a part of our reality, right? So it's I look at it as the next paradigm of how we actually are going to do marketing and advertising, you know, like light years from now. We're not going to be trying to sell something to somebody or even find the right, like everyone's just going to find the right fit, whatever product they need, whatever service they need, because we're going to be able to rely on these higher capacities. So I'm, you know, we want it now.
So what I'm seeing there is what you're doing is you are really changing the frequency, and it is such an authentic frequency that, you know, the trajectory now, that is something that, you know, I have this thing about straight lines and wobbles. To me, that's a straight line, because other people are magnetized by that frequency of authenticity. And anything that's got a wobble in it that isn't aligned with its purpose, regardless of what kind of organization or organism it is, has a wobble in its space, as far as I'm concerned. So you're creating a frequency that, you know, is so compelling because it is so authentic that it can't help but, you know, attract synchronicities and the right people to it.
Exactly. And so that straight line becomes the logo, becomes the social media post. Like it all becomes engaged with that frequency. And yeah. And so that's, you know, that's how I started exploring it with the branding and the marketing that I was doing, and wasn't telling people at first, you know, and then started to share it with my clients, and then started realizing the clients need to only be of the highest caliber.
Yeah.
Only here to do.
Absolutely. That. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so cool. I love it. And I think you're absolutely right. It's the way we should be doing business. You know, if you've got it right, you don't need to sell to anybody, because, you know, they feel for themselves whether what you've got to offer resonates with them or not.
Right. And then if we're making those decisions from that higher perspective, then we're doing the right things that line up to that frequency, right?
Yeah.
To make those probable things more possible. So about 4 years ago, I was doing that for several years, but then about 4 years ago, I just kept getting that, this kind of gnawing, but there's more I can be doing with this. And so that there's more turned into, I guess it collided with what am I able to do, right? What are my capacities? Got me to that point where I said, okay, I'm going to get on the road, and I'm going to just start like getting rid of the shell of my house and that reality, and just be open to life and surrender into the experience of what next is possible and what can I touch within it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Everybody should try it.
Yeah. And that's where my clients started saying, well, that, you know, that space that you go, take me, right? If you can see my company from that point, take me into that point. So then that turned into the next step of the journey for me. And that's kind of turned into more of a culture work with companies, getting in and really working with the culture. But But that's also when the art started. So it's been this gradual progression. I never anticipated doing anything. Life just happened. Like all of it, you know, like I just followed the what I was hearing to do. And so I'm working with these clients, going into these higher states of consciousness, which is, you know, pretty crazy experience, pretty intense. And I just heard, bring it into form, bring it into this reality. And I'm an artist, so it was natural for me to bring it in through painting. And so I would have these 2 or 3 day sessions with clients. And during that session, I would be painting the frequency of that space that we were in. And then they would take that with them to be able to get back into that space easier themselves. And that was the beginning of the meta art. It was just doing it for my clients. Then I started having my clients participate in the painting, which was its own massively creative experience, right? Right there, having this experience in these higher states of consciousness, seeing themselves, seeing their company in, you know, endless potential, having, you know, this kind of out of body experience, and then to be able to pick up a paint or to put paint on their hands and engage with the colors, and that act of creativity opened up a whole nother piece, you know, to not only the process, but then, you know, what I was, I guess, supposed to do with it next, which was just channel these paintings myself.
Mm, yeah. So you refer to them as, you know, abstract art that changes the frequency of the environment it's in.
Right.
Yeah. So what happens typically when people see a piece? Not necessarily the businesses that you've worked with, but just anybody. You know, do people have experiences when they look at your meta art?
Yes. So I'll do the painting sometimes for a client if they want to change the frequency of a room, and they don't. Nobody needs to know about it. They may want. When people come in, they might want them to feel the safety or the love, you know, that is in a space. So it's just a painting hanging on the wall that they, you know, can look at and like or not like. I've just built this, my studio here, and one of the workers was coming through. He was here for many, many months, but, a few weeks ago, he said, "You know, those paintings are yours." And I said, "Yeah." And he was like, "I don't know what they do, but they sure make me feel good." He's like, "I just walked through your studio and I'm just so happy. I can't explain it." And he said, "You know what? It kind of sticks with me. It sticks with me for a while." So you don't really have to know. You know, it's amazing to meditate with them, but you don't have to meditate with them because they are shifting that frequency of the space. You know, like when you go into a party or you go into a room and there's somebody that's in a very, very negative space and you feel it, you can feel like, okay, yeah, it feels like I'm walking on. Nobody needs to talk. you can cut it with a knife, right? Mm. So this is the same thing, except it's a specific frequency. So I will just focus on the frequency of peace, not defining what peace is. It's beyond words. It's beyond comprehension of what we as humans believe or perceive peace is, because that's going to change, right? Or we're going to all have different ideas of that. It's just the pure energy of peace. So it interacts with people on a different level, right?
Mm. Yeah.
And that happened organically too. You know, I just heard, just start painting. Don't wait for a client, just start painting. And so I did that. And then I had them in my room because I was still traveling. I was at our dear friend Jennifer's house, and I had them in my room with me and started realizing something's going on here. Like, I'm feeling, I know what I channeled into it, but I'm feeling it reflecting back out. And so, you know, started giving paintings to people going, here, take it. What happens for you, you know? So it was very organic. It was nothing that, I mean, I was definitely inspired, you know, by, you know, various people, you know, throughout time. I don't know if you, did you know Aviva Gold?
No.
Yeah. So she's an artist, and I went and spent a long weekend with Aviva, and she really gave me that experience of feeling just like just being able to turn off my mind and just paint, you know, in a really safe environment. So yeah, it was just these organic things that, you know, again, were just popping in for me, and I just followed the energy and said, yeah, I'll give that a shot.
So how do these differ from your ocular meditations, or is that a kind of development, you know, an evolution of what you were doing before?
Yeah, so it was absolutely an evolution. Because these pieces were in my room, I started meditating with them. And I didn't know, like, there's an ancient Sanskrit yogic practice of gazing. And I've heard of, you know, I'm sure I've done it before, where you meditate like on a candle flame. But so this is combining that ancient Sanskrit practice of eyes open, focusing on something, relaxing your gaze, but doing it with a piece of meta art. And it was like after the fact, you know, like after I'm meditating with it, I'm giving it to other people to meditate with. And like, what I'm, is what happening for me happening for you? And that then it was like, oh, right. There's this whole ancient practice that we take in so much of our environment through our sight. It's one of our strongest senses. So it's such a clear and easy way into our beings to use our eyes.
Well, someone has just posted a note saying, I've had the pleasure of sitting with peace, which is one of your pieces. It was an amazing experience. Okay. So now is our turn to have a little micro experience of this, because you've prepared a little video for us. We can spend 2 minutes gazing at this and monitoring what happens.
And we're going to get a little bit of an intro telling us what to do, but you're just going to, and this is very short, but you're going to find one spot on the painting, and then you relax your gaze and focus on it.
Okay, so Chris, just a word to our producer to load that up for us, and off we go. Well, I invite anyone watching to share their experiences in the chat window if you can. I tell you, my experience was that picture morphed into so many different things. It was as if it was fluid. You know how you, those old lamps from the 60s with the oil floating, it was doing that all over the place. And it was showing me so many, you know, it was this, it was that, it was something else. And what do you get when you look at it, you know, having seen it so many times before? Do you have different experiences every time? I think Leanna's frozen on us. Leanna, are you there?
I am.
You froze on us.
I know.
Has that got anything to do with the painting?
Could be, yeah. Because I'm hardwired in, so probably. Yeah, absolutely. The painting can go completely white. It can go completely three-dimensional. It spins. And what's so fascinating with it, and the way that I really understand it, is every time you sit with it, and you don't have to sit with it, ideally like 5-10 minutes. You don't have to sit with it for hours, right? But every time you sit with it, it's a completely new and different experience. And I believe it's because that frequency is able to align more with you each time. And I've had people say, and I know I personally feel like, I feel like every cell in my body is vibrating with that piece. So that's why it doesn't take a lot of time. Or I could just walk past piece and just glance at it, and I can feel that shift. And so it's fascinating. I mean, I sit back and go, this is crazy, right? Like, I mean, I also do this for individuals. I do this for an individual's basically their higher self. I paint the frequency of their higher self. And so that, you can imagine, takes you into a very, very deep multidimensional journey within yourself. But it is, and it's so simple, you know, it's so gentle. To let you know, I'm starting on Sunday on the summer solstice. I'm starting love. I'll be painting love. And it's, I'm just already in awe, and I haven't even hung up the canvases yet.
Mm. Well, two people have commented in this particular chat room saying, wow, yes, the colors were fluid and they moved. And for me, it was like the picture was breathing in and out and moved out of focus.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's a wonder that you ever get any work done. I mean, don't you just want to sit and stare at them, gaze at them for hours on end?
Well, I will tell you that I do spend a lot of time in my studio, and I'm painting at all hours, but this one behind me, I don't know, it's an actual door. And
which one? The yellow one, the gray?
The tall one behind
the me. Tall one is a door.
It's an okay. Actual door that, yeah. Sometimes I just feel like I'm like completely walking through that door, just into the cosmos. So yeah, it's a trip.
I'll bet. And you sell these?
I do. I do, and I commission them for individuals as well. Yeah. And I also can do them for an organization. I can imagine a hospital, you know, having some of these paintings, and it's healing. It's just the frequency of healing, of being whole.
Yeah. And I can imagine if you've worked with an organization or a company on their branding, you know, on everything, to have something visual as well that is a kind of grounding point, a central point for anyone who walks past that. You know, it's an anchor. You can't not be back in that same experience every time you look at it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you can engage with the paintings. There's actually many times, there's, you know, places to put your hands, you can engage with the painting and actually feel it. So, yeah, it's, I mean, the best is, of course, is to see them in person.
Yeah.
You can see it, it works just the same being on a video or in a photo or in a reproduced.
Someone else has just posted, the part of the painting I focused on kept making little blips and flips. It was unexpected and interesting. And someone else says, the area that I focused on was moving and changing shape. It was drawing me into it. Just amazing. Thank you. Well, that's just a 2-minute clip there. Yeah, imagine having one of these on your wall. You know, I've always thought that we should have something that we can have on our wall, like the ceiling, opposite our bed, and we can just lie in bed with maybe a soft light on it and just go into it. And I think we'd have amazing dreams.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And especially because who doesn't need more peace,
yeah, right?
Or more joy or more love or more healing?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Leanne, you describe yourself as at your most comfortable when you are unearthing your own next grandest adventure, exploring what is possible within the capabilities of human potential and integrating these new traits into practical applications. What do you think is going to be your next grandest adventure?
Well, I just know right now it's connected to the paintings. I see myself doing a massive painting on the exterior of a building with an entire community, deciding on the frequency that they want expressed and doing that together and incorporating sound. So the direction that I'm feeling called right now is definitely, you know, definitely the paintings. Yeah.
So is your meta art on your website? Can people go and look at it? Can they order things there?
Yeah, so it is on my website, and they can see some samples there. And at this point, I just have to reach out to me. I am going to be linking a way in which you can order canvases and, you know, all sorts of foam covers and blankets or whatever you want with the art on it. That's going to be coming very shortly. But, you know, for me, it's really, and I do offer a lot of these on my YouTube channel, and I do intend to create more of them for free of charge. I, you know, these meditations just need to be out there for people to have and to utilize. So for peace, for example, I always tell people, share them. You know, there's a meditation, I think it's 11 minutes on my YouTube. I can put a link on your page. Share it, you know, if you find a benefit, pass it along to people, because I just want people to experience these more peace, more love, more joy.
So just go to YouTube and search under your name, Leanne Heltzel.
Actually, it's under Creative One.
Creative One.
Yeah.
Oh, well, so people can sample them for longer then.
The perfect place to go is on my website, because on the meta art page there's a video there, so it gives a little bit of history, and then there's an 11 minute meditation, so that's the best spot. Yeah.
Okay, so do you want to spell that out for us?
So you're just going to go to Leanne Heltzel, so it's LeanneHeltzel.com.
Leanne, it's been fascinating speaking with you tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been so much fun.
It is fun, isn't it?
It really is.
It really is.
Thank you again for the process of asking me to think of those books, because it really did take me on a bit of a journey. Yeah.
That's the unexpected reward that I never imagined guests would get. For, you know, going through the process of and writing it all up for me. So I'm really pleased that people are having that experience, because now it feels like an equal exchange.
Oh, yeah. It was really fascinating. It really, I learned a lot about myself and yeah, and, memory, yeah.
Yeah, great. Leanne, thank you.
Thank you so much.
And a big thank you to you for joining us on this series. And if you want to be the first to be notified of these events and the new 10 best spiritual book lists that are going up every single month to add to the archive, you can sign up for our newsletter at the NoBSSpiritualBookClub.com, where you'll find all kinds of things, my monthly bookworms, the ever-growing archive, and these fabulous videos as well. And if you'd like to listen to these interviews on the go, you can download recordings at Own Times Radio, Spotify, iTunes, Anchor, and many other podcast platforms, and also on my website, sedgebeer.com. Thanks for joining us. I'll be back again at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.